Joseph Pasek of barnburner.ca, our daily podcast entitled Fired Up, and welcome to another edition of the NFL Blitz with the Hall of Famer, John Nelson of OSG Sports in Atlanta. Now, John has requested, yes, he's in Atlanta, but he has Canadian roots here. He has requested 2 to 3 minutes to talk about the 105th Norm's Age Grey Cup between the Argos and Calgary Stampeders. And you know, I'm situated in Toronto. The Argos are the Grey Cup champions, 27-24. What do you say, John? What a scene. Snowing, cold, Shania Twain looking hot. Amazing. What a Grey Cup.
Yeah, and I think the running bet was, okay, were there more snowflakes hitting the ground at TD Place, or were there more sequins and rhinestones on Shania Twain's outfit? I think that was what the running bet was in Vegas. But when you look at the game, and it was a great performance by guys like Devere Posey, who college football fans in the U.S. know from his time at Ohio State, and you know, Ricky Ray winning his fourth Grey Cup as a starter, and you know, having done it the way that he has coming out of Sacramento State with a couple of cups of coffee in the NFL and one with the Fresno Frenzy, I believe, in one of the indoor leagues. And, you know, you look at just performances in general, like Declan Cross, who, you know, was a great H-back and a great tight end in a game like this. But, you know, tremendous defense on a scoop and score, one of the biggest deficits to come back from in the fourth quarter. Devere Posey with a 100-yard touchdown pass, reception for a score. So I really think that the questions are going to come down to the offensive play calling for the Stamps with, you know, Bo Levi Mitchell with probably enough seconds on the clock for two or three plays, depending on what you wanted to do, instead of setting up for the game-time field goal at 27 with Rene Paredes, who hit from 39 earlier in the game, in worse conditions that were, you know, inside 30 seconds, throwing into double coverage in the corner, pick, game over. And, you know, the gunslinger's got to live with it for another year, but a great performance for Ricky Ray. And then I think the question is, does the 38-year-old retire? And considering what Mark Trestman and Jim Popp had to do to assemble this squad pretty much from the ground up last in the queue, it's a great effort by the Argos this season, and the double blue are your champs.
All right, so I know this is called NFL Blitz for this segment, NFL, CFL Blitz, whatever you want to call it. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about the CFL. You mentioned Ricky Ray retiring. Ricky Ray, if he does retire, and he did an interview with TSN after sort of crying, so maybe we can lean towards that. At the Eastern Division Final, the Argos at BMO Field had about 25,000. Do you think this Grey Cup victory enables them to average a crowd of 20,000 or above 20,000. Also, what do you expect Tuesday or Wednesday is a Grey Cup party or parade or whatever you want to call that at City Hall or Rotunda Square? Do you expect more than 200-300 people there?
Yeah, I hope so on both counts. I hope that the Argos can really attract a stellar fan base next season coming off a Grey Cup victory. And really to show the support. I mean, you and I both know, and we were doing the math here at OSGHQ in Atlanta, that the Argos are behind the Leafs, they're behind the Jays, they're behind the Raptors, they're behind TFC, they're probably behind the Marlies, so that puts them, what, at number six in the market right now when it comes
don't forget
to
Rock,
the eyes being drawn to them. And so then, you know, the Rock averaging what they do when it comes to indoor lacrosse. So, I mean, you're talking sixth or seventh in the marketplace, and you're hoping really that this can be one of those moments that, you know, the town can show up and show the Argos a solid, considering everything that they went through this year to get to the last game of the season and then win the last game of the season. So you're really hoping so on both counts.
Now, last question before we get to the NFL action there. Last week, everybody was questioning Edmonton Eskimos head coach. Why did you go to field goal? Why not score a touchdown and all the – now, the Argos had the ball, and they chose to run it and go for the field goal. Calgary, Dave Dickinson, had the ball, field goal position, as you mentioned, and they decide to throw it in double coverage. Is there any heat going to be on Dickinson?
I don't think it'll be on Dickinson. I think it'll be more on Bolivar than anything else for trying to force it. I mean, when they were on the last drive, the first pass that was thrown was incomplete. Then he went back to the same route, back shoulder throw, completed it, tremendous catch. So you understand the trust that the gunslinger has in his receivers. But I think that with 15, 16 seconds on the clock and you've got two solid plays to figure something out, I mean, it probably goes against type to sit there and say that the Stamps will be playing for a game-time field goal to send it into overtime, considering just the mentality of guys like Dickinson and guys like Bo Levi Mitchell. But obviously, I think there's going to be questions, but I think that Bo Levi will be the first person to stand up and say, my fault, my throw, and then you just take it and learn from there. So I think that this will be a learning experience for the Stamps as a roster and for Bo Levi going forward.
As I said in another podcast, 105th Grey Cup, probably 95 have been close. 52, 53 Super Bowls, and about 45 have not been close. So CFL action, like Shania Twain last said, I'm happy to be Canadian, and especially I'm Canadian, so I'm happy to be Canadian. Now let's get to the NFL and how fitting this is. We're going to begin with three Thanksgiving Day in the United States games, Minnesota going into Detroit and doing a number on the Lions. Minnesota, they host the Super Bowl. They're very close to getting home field advantage throughout the NFC playoffs if Philadelphia loses a game. But how good are the Vikings?
Well, I think it comes down to Case Keenum and how comfortable he has gotten with that offense. And when you have a combination like Keenum and Adam Thielen, it shouldn't surprise really that, you know, everyone's questioning, you know, who is Adam Thielen and who, you know, and we've seen Case Keenum in Houston Texans outfits in the past and struggled as a starting quarterback. But, you know, when you're not the starter and your reps are with the quote-unquote second-team receivers, you're going to be more comfortable with those guys. So to have a relationship with Adam Thielen shouldn't surprise people to the extent and the effort that they've had. So, you know, for them to be putting up the numbers that they are as a pitch and catch combo, and I think that that sets up things for Latavius Murray as well, because, you know, if you're focused on the receivers, then you hand the ball off to Murray, who had 84 yards and added to his touchdown totals, you know, on Thursday last week. So, you know, it's a great 1-2 combination so far offensively, and you're seeing a defense with guys like Harrison Smith stepping up and really clamping down on teams. So, you know, obviously everybody's looking at the notion that you could have the Vikings as the home team going into the Roman numeral classic, but don't count on it happening just because it never has. So I know that there's a first time for everything, but I'm still looking at Philadelphia, then Minnesota, then the rest of the NFC.
All right. The LA Chargers going into Big D Dallas and doing a number on the Cowboys. They certainly missed Ezekiel Elliott, but they missed their linebacker, the heart and soul of the defense, Sean Lee, 28-6. Now, the Chargers, do they have any hope of making the AFC playoffs?
Well, I mean, right now they're in that gaggle at 5-6, and right now I think they would be the second team on the outside looking in if the playoffs started today. And, you know, when you look at the Carson Chargers, you just kind of wonder which team's going to show up on any given day and how they're going to be defensively. But I think that really it exposed Dallas more for who they're not when they don't have Sean Lee and when they don't have Ezekiel Elliott. You know, they released Darren McFadden this past week, but at the same time, they're trying to rely on Alfred Morris as one of their lead running backs. And he's proven in previous years in Washington what he can be. But, you know, you're seeing more gaps offensively in Dallas than, you know, we're used to seeing. And, you know, I think that the seat's getting pretty hot. It's not quite nuclear or jalapeno or ghost pepper hot for Jason Garrett, but it's getting there.
All right. Now, I don't know if you want to touch on the Thursday nighter. There was nothing going to double up on the Giants. What do you have to say about that? Well, we can pass that game if you want.
A yawner. Let's move on to the weekend.
All right. So, Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock kickoffs. Your home city there, beating Tampa. No surprise. You think Atlanta has, you know, they started off hot, then they went cool down, and now they're back to being the Falcons again.
Well, also consider who they've been playing. You know, you have Tampa, who has got a dinged up Jameis Winston, and they got a dinged up Doug Martin today, who was lost in the game and had to go through concussion protocol. So I'm not really sold on Atlanta. You know, if you really want me to do a buy, sell, or hold, really, I'm still looking at selling the Falcons. I'm not looking at a buy, maybe a weak hold toward a sell, but you know, they'll be in the mix, and they'll probably be in the wild card mix all the way through the rest of the regular season. So I had the feeling that the season was going to be more 9-7, 10-6-ish than it was last season, just because of the schedule toughening up and the losses that Atlanta had personnel-wise to free agency and such. But the win against Tampa, not much of a surprise.
All right, a battle of Ohio. We're going to have five this. Cincinnati, 30. Cleveland, 16. Are the Cleveland Browns ever going to win this year?
Yes, they are. I still think they're going to go 2-14 at some point. I know you're sold on maybe 1-15, but I think that 2 will happen toward the end of the year when playoff seedings have been determined. I think they'll sneak up and bite somebody, and then they'll probably win in week 17.
Tennessee edging Indianapolis again. I don't know about Tennessee. They're arguably the, you know, tied for their division lead, but something about them just doesn't strike me. They, you know, like, they win when they're not supposed to, win easy, and fight hard to beat Indianapolis.
Which means to me they're an 8-8 team. Doesn't that mean that to you?
Yeah. Well, I don't want them to be 8-8 because then, you know, one of the other teams, and you know who I'm talking about, I want them to make the playoffs for the first time since 1999. But we'll talk about that in a couple seconds. New England doing a number on Miami. You want to say anything about that?
The Patriots just continue to roll, and Tom Brady finds ways to win with a receiving core that changes. Rex Burkhead had another tremendous game, and for people who picked him up in fantasy, it's been a tremendous deep draft pickup or waiver wire pick this season.
Carolina going to New York and beating the Jets 35-27. The big thing is, it looks like Cam Newton is back.
Yeah, he's healthy, and you see what he means to that offense, but Greg Olsen in his first game back from the foot injury re-injured it, so you don't know what that means to their offense. Probably means an Ed Dixon appearance offensively at tight end more than in the past. So obviously a big loss offensively for Ron Rivera and for Cam Newton to have that big target in Olsen. Don't know, as you and I are talking, how long he's going to be out, but it's the same foot apparently that he had injured and was out earlier in the season with. So big loss for the Panthers and a big win for the Panthers.
Philadelphia, 10-1, destroying Chicago, 31-3. You know, like, Philadelphia's 10-1, but they have easy games. Like, when are they going to be tested?
Well, then that's the question. I think that it's going to be in division play, but then you look at division play and you're going, okay, well, Washington's hot and cold. Dallas is hot and cold. Maybe they've gotten through the bulk of their schedule and just getting there and getting there in one piece, and maybe when he gets to the playoffs, that's when things change. But I think the bigger story coming out of this game was John Fox, quote, not giving a rip, end quote, about people talking about his job future, and considering how the Bears don't seem to be showing up as a group on a weekly basis, I think John Fox should care more than a rip, or maybe he should actually give a rip about his job future.
All right. Now, a team that I mentioned a couple minutes ago, my Buffalo Bills, they're in a playoff position once again, going into Kansas City. And, you know, I don't care about Kansas City starting off hot, going cold, but winning in Kansas City is normally impossible to do. And the Buffalo Bills proved one thing. Don't write them off, especially with Taylor as the quarterback, and especially if their defense comes to play. Next week is a big, big game at New Era Field in Archer Park as they take on some guy named Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. If the Bills, let me tell you, if the Bills could beat the Patriots next week, I'm going to go on the line. They aren't making the playoffs because the Bills, the week after, have Indianapolis in New Era Field and then have Miami coming to New Era Field. So I think the Bills, if they win, could be at least 9-5.
Well, and I think the larger question, for Kansas City is, when do you go to Pat Mahomes? And that, to me, is the larger question at quarterback, because of Alex Smith and just where is his offense gone? And you wonder where the Alex Smith from last season has gone. So I think that you're going to have to bring in the rookie out of Texas Tech at some point and see what the water is going to be like. But I'm more stunned at the lack of offensive firepower that we've seen the last month or so from Kansas City. So, if you're looking at your Bills at 9-5, getting into there, that 9-7 race somewhere in there, I think that to your point, the game this upcoming weekend could be the catalyst to get them in the heat of the wild card run.
All right, 4 o'clock games. I don't know if you want to touch on this. Seattle beating San Fran, and Jimmy Garoppolo making an appearance, going 1-for-1, touchdown. I'm seeing this next week, Jimmy Garoppolo starting. What do you say?
I think for the sake of the 49ers, I think he should, but when you look at what Beathard isn't able to do at quarterback and what Jimmy Garoppolo can do or has proven that he can do in New England, you're looking at a New England Garoppolo and trying to extrapolate what he can do in a San Francisco situation. He might be just as under the gun as Beathard is when it comes to having to put up offensive numbers. But, obviously you're looking at a quarterback situation there, and when do you pull the trigger? Because obviously you wouldn't have pulled for the trade if you didn't think that Garoppolo would be your guy in the future. Just when are you going to do it? It's the same question in San Francisco that people are having in Kansas City.
John, I know me and you like wrestling and all that. Oakland, Denver, there was a wrestling match going on just starting of the game. Khalid, Crabtree, punches. Like, what is going on here in the NFL here? Punches, and then, Oakland beating Denver 21-14. But the story of this game had to be the fight, right?
Yeah, and it's the second time in a year that Aqib Talib has pulled Michael Crabtree's gold chain off of him. So, maybe Talib just likes Michael Crabtree's choice of jewelry and where he buys his jewelry and just doesn't know where to buy it himself. But, you and I understand the notion of the heel and the brawl and all that kind of stuff. And Oakland embraces that kind of stuff, and so does Aqib Talib. So maybe Talib should have been in the dark hat today, but it's the second time that those two have jostled, because I think they jostled New Year's weekend in the first round of the playoffs last year. So, not a surprise that those two mixed it up. Not a surprise that Talib went chasing after Crabtree's gold chain again, but the way that it just absolutely devolved, and you had two groups fighting. You had the Biggins fighting off to the side, and then you had Crabtree trying to take swings at Talib at the same time that they're trying to wrestle each other to the ground. You're probably going to end up with some suspensions. But, I think that Denver, who's had problems offensively, did what they needed to do, at least from a defensive standpoint, pulling out one of the weapons of the Raiders in this game. But, Paxton Lynch seeing some work, but then he injures his ankle and he becomes emotional on the sidelines because he had his chance, and now you don't know how long he's going to be out. So Denver's back to square one when it comes to trying to figure out who their quarterback is going to be, because it's the third quarterback they've used this year, and none of them have been effective. So obviously there's questions for John Elway. But, when you've got a game like Broncos and Raiders, and the most exciting thing that people are talking about is the absolute brawls that happened, that tells you a lot about what happened on the field.
On the next game, we mentioned Tennessee. That division, AFC South, Jacksonville going to Arizona. Arizona defeating them in the last second field goal, 27-24. But that division, I don't know which team is better, Jacksonville or Tennessee.
Well, and, you're seeing the growth of Blake Bortles at quarterback, but also something to pay attention to here. Marcel Darius got into a fight when teams were exiting the field. Bruce Arians was seen giving colorful metaphors to folks on his way off the field. You don't know what that was about. So, you had Blaine Gabbert, the former Jacksonville quarterback, going up against his old team. And, you know, you're seeing, you know, Leonard Fournette still having to deal with the ankle injury, but, you know, you're seeing a Jacksonville team that might be finding itself after all this time. And at the same time, though, Arizona really needed to get a win. And the fact that they were able to do it in such a clutch fashion, I think, might be able to propel them as they go for the remainder of the season in a non-conference, non-division game. So, you know, maybe that'll help them moving forward. But obviously, a lot of folks had some issues after the game itself.
All right. And arguably the matchup of the day, the New Orleans Saints traveling to Los Angeles to take on the Rams. Rams beating the Saints 26-20. Rams now hold higher over the Saints 8-3 since they're, you know, faced or head-to-head matchup. Are the Rams for real? And the Saints, you know, like, they always go on the road and then they would have a stinker and then, you know, next week, whoever they're playing, Drew Brees is going to throw for 500 yards.
Well, but remember, the Rams defensively are growing into who they are over the last couple of seasons. They've become, they've gone from a bunch of rookies in St. Louis to some experienced players who really can get after it in Los Angeles. And when you're led by a guy like Alec Ogletree, who the folks at OSG Sports covered all the way back to his high school years, you know what you're getting when it comes to that defense. And they're a bunch of solid guys defensively. And then, you know, when you're playing out at the Coliseum and you have Todd Gurley as one of your main offensive weapons, and then Cooper Kupp having a career day off of the arm of Jared Goff, I think that says a lot about the depth that the Rams have at receiver. So once again, you had a very young team a couple of years ago coming into their own as experienced players in the NFL. And the Saints seem to just struggle away from New Orleans for whatever reason that is. But I think also what you're seeing is another solid rookie in Alvin Kamara, their running back, who was also covered in high school by the folks at OSG. So we've seen a lot of these guys come of age in front of our eyes. And I think that really the Saints at 8-3 are very dangerous. And I think that the Rams at 8-3 could be dangerous, but I think that they're probably a year ahead of schedule under Sean McVay.
All right, so that's week 12. Quickly for the week 13, I can't believe it's 13 weeks and then Washington and Dallas,
yeah,
in Dallas. What do you have to say about this one? Kirk Cousins against, you know, Prescott there. Do you believe Washington is a heavy favorite?
I think Dallas is the favorite.
Dallas is a 1.5-point favorite, but that's definitely, if I was a betting man, which I'm not, Norm is, I would bet Washington. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, and I would as well, because remember, if the game is 3, that means Vegas basically thinks it's a push. So with the home team at 1.5, really you're looking at, you know, the Redskins being a 1.5, a 2-point favorite in there somewhere. I think that's probably a little short right now. I think that Washington should be able to put up numbers in Dallas against the Cowboys. And until Ezekiel Elliott comes back, I think that you're going to see just a big gap in the running game. And I think the defenses are going to try to force Dak Prescott to beat them with his arm, and he's yet to prove that he could do that.
And now, other week 13 critical matchups, you're at new Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. Minnesota at Atlanta. Also, we mentioned New England at Buffalo, but another good game, Carolina, New Orleans, to Arizona. And we talked about Philadelphia basically not playing somebody. Well, next Sunday night, Philadelphia into Seattle. That should be, then
yeah,
we'll know if Philadelphia is for real.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I think that that's one of the tougher environments for a young quarterback to go into. And it'll be a test for Carson Wentz. And, you know, I think that Minnesota coming to Atlanta, I think it's going to be another test for Atlanta's secondary, specifically going up against Case Keenum and the Vikings. I think that Matt Ryan might have some problems against the Vikings as a defense. So, I mean, right now I would see Minnesota as a slight favorite, and I would also see Probably my guess is that Philadelphia will probably end up being somewhere in the 3 or 4 range right now as a favorite going in. But I think it'll be a tough test for the Eagles to figure out whether or not they are real.
All right. That's been the NFL Blitz with John Nelson, Hall of Famer of OSG Sports. John, tell everybody how they could get a hold of you. And also, we have a big announcement in collaboration with Barn Burner and OSG, John Nelson. Do you want to tell everybody about that?
Well, yeah. Well, let's get to how they can get in touch with me first, and then let's get that tease and leave the suspense a little bit. Easiest way is to follow on Twitter at OSG Nelson. Follow along at OSG Sports as well for all of the college football news that you need, and also follow me on Instagram at Cute Sports Guy, because if that's what the boss says I am, then that's what I am. And also like OSG Sports on Facebook, and if you want to follow me personally on Facebook, it's John Freeman Nelson, because there's about 35 John Nelsons. And I chose my middle name just to be a little different. So you want to go ahead, and since I've kind of held folks at bay just a little bit, explain what's going on down the line?
Actually, you say, because this is a first time, as I recall, a North American first. Like I said, I'm based out of Canada. John's based out of Atlanta. You spill the beans there.
Okay. Well, what we're going to do, Barn Burner and OSG have decided to unite. It's like the Wonder Twins, and one of us is the shape of an eagle, and the other is the bucket of water. And what we're going to do is we are going to have a weekly radio program on indoor lacrosse, outside the box, and it's going to start later this week, and we're going to have some special guests every single week joining us, talking about what's going on indoors when it comes to the NLL. And also we're going to have some rotating folks in. We're going to keep you up to date with what's going on in the league for the entire season. And, you know, once again, special guests and some recurring guests down the line to keep you posted.
And you know what? I'm going to spill
one. Yeah.
We're going to spill the beans. People have asked me thousands and thousands of emails saying, did Dan Lattister provide you a championship ring yet? We'll answer that in our first edition of Outside the Box with myself and John Nelson. We're going to have Dan Lattister, Georgia Swarm head coach, join us all the time. Also, some special guests. And we're trying to line up, if everything fits in right, the commissioner of the National Lacrosse League. You won't want to miss that. That's on barnburner.ca. OSG, John Nelson, and myself here. Check it out, and we're going to do it, like John says, weekly. National Lacrosse League covered like nobody else. And I had to team up with a Hall of Famer. That's John Nelson of OSG Sports. This has been the NFL Blitz, CFL Blitz. Congratulations to the Toronto Argonauts. John, you want to say anything about the Grey Cup?
It was tremendous pictures for all of North America. And if anybody wants to slide the schedule up a month, you're crazy.
All right. Well, that was basically a snowstorm, unexpected snowstorm. The 105th Grey Cup champions, Toronto Argonauts, and a champion here on barnburner.ca, also OSG, John Nelson. Thanks a lot, John.
Anytime, my friend.